Chapter 25. Felis, what on earth has he been telling you? Interrupted Lute. Dubert, in a sort of odd scare. I told you already that at first, when I picked him up in the garden, he was incoherent. Afterwards he was naturally reticent. But I gather at least that he could not help himself.
He couldn't? Shouted Lute.
Dubert in a great voice. Then, lowering his tone impressively, and what about me? Could I help myself?
The surgeon stood up. His thoughts were running upon the flute, his constant companion with a consoling voice. In the vicinity of field ambulances, after 24 hours hard work, he had been known to trouble with its sweet sounds the horrible stillness of battlefields, given over to silence and the dead. The solacing hour of his daily life was approaching, and in peacetime he held on to the minutes as a miser to his hoard.
Of course, he said, perfunctorily. You would think so. It's amusing. However, being perfectly neutral and friendly to you both, I have consented to deliver his message to you. Say that I am humoring an invalid if you like. He wants you to know that this affair is by no means at an end. He intends to send you his seconds directly he has regained his strength, providing, of course, the army is not in the field at that time.
He intends, does he?
Why, certainly, spluttered Lute. Dubert in a passion. The secret of his exasperation was not apparent to the visitor. But this passion confirmed the surgeon in the belief which was gaining ground outside that some very serious difference had arisen between these two young men, something serious enough to wear an air of mystery, some fact of the utmost gravity. To settle their urgent difference about that fact, those two young men had risked being broken and disgraced at the outset almost of their career. The surgeon feared that the forthcoming inquiry would fail to satisfy the public curiosity. They would not take the public into their confidence as to that something which had passed between them of a nature so outrageous as to make them face a charge of murder neither more nor less. But what could it be? The surgeon was not very curious by temperament, but that question haunting his mind caused him twice that evening to hold the instrument off his lips, and sit silent for a whole minute right in the middle of a tune trying to form a plausible conjecture. 2. He succeeded in this object no better than the rest of the garrison and the whole of society. The two young officers, of no special consequence till then, became distinguished by the universal curiosity as to the origin of their quarrel. Madame de Lion's salon was the center of ingenious surmises. That lady herself was for a time assailed by inquiries as being the last person known to have spoken to these unhappy and reckless young men, before they went out together from her house to a savage encounter with swords, at dusk, in a private garden. She protested as he had not observed anything unusual in their demeanor. Lute. Ferrod had been visibly annoyed at being called away. That was natural enough. No man likes to be disturbed in a conversation with a lady famed for her elegance and sensibility. But in truth the subject bored Madame de Lion, since her personality could by no stretch of reckless gossip be connected with this affair. And it irritated her to hear it advanced that there might have been some woman in the case. This irritation arose, not from her elegance or sensibility, but from a more instinctive side of her nature. It became so great at last, that she peremptorily forbade the subject to be mentioned under her roof. Near her couch the prohibition was obeyed, but farther off in the salon the pall of the imposed silence continued to be lifted more or less. A personage with a long, pale face, resembling the countenance of a sheep, opined, shaking his head, that it was a quarrel of long-standing envenomed by time. It was objected to him that the men themselves were too young for such a theory. They belonged also to different and distant parts of France. There were other physical impossibilities too. A sub-commissary of the intendance, an agreeable and cultivated bachelor in kerseymere breeches, hessian boots, and a blue coat embroidered with silver lace,
who affected to believe in the transmigration of souls, suggested that the two had met perhaps in some previous existence. The feud was in the forgotten past. It might have been something quite inconceivable in the present state of their being, but their souls remembered the animosity, and manifested an instinctive antagonism. He developed this theme jocularly. Yet the affair was so absurd from the worldly, the military, the honorable, or the prudential point of view, that this weird explanation seemed rather more reasonable than any other. The two officers had confided nothing definite to anyone. Humiliation at having been worsted arms and hand, and an uneasy feeling of having been involved in a scrape by the injustice of fate, kept Lute Farad savagely dumb. He mistrusted the sympathy of mankind. That would, of course, go to that dandified staff officer. Lying in bed, he raved aloud to the pretty maid who administered to his needs with devotion, and listened to his horrible imprecations with alarm. That Lute Dubert should be made to pay for it seemed to her just and natural. Her principal care was that Lute Farad should not excite himself. He appeared so wholly admirable and fascinating to the humility of her heart, that her only concern was to see him get well quickly, even if it were only to resume his visits to Madame de Lion's salon. Lute Dubert kept silent for the immediate reason that there was no one, except a stupid young soldier servant, to speak to. Further, he was aware that the episode, so grave professionally, had its comic side. When reflecting upon it, he still felt that he would like to wring Lute Farad's neck for him. But this formula was figurative rather than precise, and expressed more a state of mind than an actual physical impulse. At the same time, there was in that young man a feeling of comradeship and kindness which made him unwilling to make the position of Lute Farad worse than it was. He did not want to talk at large about this wretched affair. At the inquiry he would have, of course, to speak the truth in self-defense. This prospect vexed him. But no inquiry took place. The army took the field instead. Lute Dubert, liberated without remark, took up his regimental duties, and Lute Farad, his arm just out of the sling, rode unquestioned with his squadron, to complete his convalescence in the smoke of battlefields, and the fresh air of night bivouacs. This bracing treatment suited him so well, that at the first rumor of an armistice being signed he could turn without misgivings to the thoughts of his private warfare. This time it was to be regular warfare. He sent two friends to Lute Dubert, whose regiment was stationed only a few miles away. Those friends had asked no questions of their principal. I owe him one, that pretty staff officer, he had said, grimly, and they went away quite contentedly on their mission. Lute Dubert had no difficulty in finding two friends equally discreet and devoted to their principal. There's a crazy fellow to whom I must give a lesson, he had declared curtly, and they asked for no better reasons. On these grounds an encounter with dueling swords was arranged one early morning in a convenient field. At the third set to Lute Dubert found himself lying on his back on the dewy grass with a hole in his side. A serene sun rising over a landscape of meadows and woods hung on his left. A surgeon, not the flute player, but another, was bending over him, feeling around the wound. Narrow squeak. But it will be nothing, he pronounced. Lute Dubert heard these words with pleasure. One of his seconds, sitting on the wet grass, and sustaining his head on his lap, said, "The fortune of war, mon pauvre vieux. What will you have? You had better make it up like two good fellows. Do. You don't know what you ask," murmured Lute Dubert, in a feeble voice. H. However, if he dot in another part of the meadow the seconds of Lute Farad were urging him to go over and shake hands with his adversary. "You have paid him off now, K. Diable. It's the proper thing to do. This Dubert is a decent fellow." "I know the decency of these generals' pets," muttered Lute Ferrod through his teeth, and the somber expression of his face discouraged further efforts at reconciliation. The seconds, bowing from a distance, took their men off the field. In the afternoon lute, Dubert, very popular as a good comrade uniting great bravery with a frank and equable temper, had many visitors. It was remarked that lute, Ferrod did not, as is customary, show himself much abroad to receive the felicitations of his friends. They would not have failed him, because he too was liked for the exuberance of his southern nature and the simplicity of his character. In all the places where officers were in the habit of assembling at the end of the day, the duel of the morning was talked over from every point of view. Though Lute Dubert had got worst at this time, his sword play was commended. No one could deny that it was very close, very scientific. It was even whispered that if he got touched, it was because he wished to spare his adversary. But by many the vigor and dash of Lute Ferrod's attack were pronounced irresistible. The merits of the two officers as combatants were frankly discussed, but their attitude to each other after the duel was criticized lightly and with caution. It was irreconcilable, and that was to be regretted. But after all, they knew best what the care of their honor dictated. It was not a matter for their comrades to pry into overmuch. As to the origin of the quarrel, the general impression was that it dated from the time they were holding garrison in Strasbourg. The musical surgeon shook his head at that. It went much farther back, he thought. Why, of course. You must know the whole story, cried several voices, eager with curiosity. What was it? He raised his eyes from his glass deliberately. Even if I knew ever so well, you can't expect me to tell you, since both the principals choose to say nothing. He got up and went out, leaving the sense of mystery behind him. He could not stay any longer, because the witching hour of flute playing was drawing near. After he had gone, a very young officer observed solemnly, obviously, his lips are sealed. Nobody questioned the high correctness of that remark. Somehow it added to the impressiveness of the affair. Several older officers of both regiments, prompted by nothing but sheer kindness and love of harmony, proposed to form a court of honor, to which the two young men would leave the task of their reconciliation. Unfortunately, they began by approaching Lute Ferrod, on the assumption that, having just scored heavily, he would be found placable and disposed to moderation. The reasoning was sound enough. Nevertheless, the move turned out unfortunate. In that relaxation of moral fiber, which is brought about by the ease of soothed vanity, Lute Ferrod had condescended in the secret of his heart to review the case, and even had come to doubt not the justice of his cause, but the absolute sagacity of his conduct. This being so, he was disinclined to talk about it. The suggestion of the regimental wise men put him in a difficult position. He was disgusted at it, and this disgust, by a paradoxical logic, reawakened his animosity against Lute Dubert. Was he to be pestered with this fellow forever, the fellow who had an infernal knack of getting round people somehow? And yet it was difficult to refuse point blank that mediation sanctioned by the code of honor. He met the difficulty by an attitude of grim reserve. He twisted his mustache and used vague words. His case was perfectly clear. He was not ashamed to state it before a proper court of honor, neither was he afraid to defend it on the ground. He did not see any reason to jump at the suggestion before ascertaining how his adversary was likely to take it. Later in the day, his exasperation growing upon him, he was heard in a public place saying sardonically that it would be the very luckiest thing for Lute Dubert, because the next time of meeting he need not hope to get off with the mere trifle of 3 weeks in bed. This boastful phrase might have been prompted by the most profound Machiavellism. Southern natures often hide, under the outward impulsiveness of action and speech, a certain amount of astuteness. Lute Ferrod, mistrusting the justice of men, by no means desired a court of honor, and the above words, according so well with his temperament, had also the merit of serving his turn. Whether meant so or not, they found their way in less than 24 hours into Lute Dubert's bedroom. In consequence, Lute Dubert, sitting propped up with pillows, received the overtures made to him next day by the statement that the affair was of a nature which could not bear discussion. The pale face of the wounded officer, his weak voice which he had yet to use cautiously, and the courteous Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.